Yeah, this is a difficult situation, and whether we're in a cycle that's like the ice age that we don't have any effect on it, or we have a little effect on it, or we could put the brakes on, or to what extent we can put the brakes on, or who knows? At the last minute, we may have some huge, gigantic volcanic eruption, and we have a nuclear winter. So it's kind of a strange thing, isn't it? I was just before we started talking. We're talking to Ronnie about, and we're finishing placement. We're going to be going into some sustainability today. But Ronnie was talking about his cohort, and this placement issue is a big one. But tracking, and we spent some time tracking the last time. And I told Ronnie how hard it is to track. And we talked about one possibility is, if there's an HR department, you can work with that HR department and suggest to them that this is a federal program and we've got all these certifications we like to track. And you always want to put a carrot at the end of this. We like to track and we like to offer refreshers. So we want to keep in touch with our graduates. And can you work with us on this, or can you if you do an annual review or some sort of review, can you, keep in touch with us on that? That's one approach. The other approach is, rather than working through the employer, work with the student. And sometimes if you could work with both. Sometimes if it's a big company, you can work with the HR department, and that works pretty good. They may have, we do annual reviews, and you're certainly, we'll look at that review and we could offer you some suggestions from that review. The other thing that works really well, if you can keep them, is put a carrot in front of the graduate and say, we've got some we've got some refreshers going on, or we'd like to invite you to a party, or we'd like to have you attend a session, or just an alumni reunion where you can get in touch with everyone. But it is hard. And for those of you who experienced grantees, have you found anything particular well that works that we could suggest?
What we do is we build it in at the beginning. At the very beginning, at intake, we talk to the students about, they're going to do this and make their plans and all. But we always talk to them about follow-up and staying in contact with the program, and that the staff will contact them monthly or quarterly, and that we'll contact the employers. And when we place them, we have a relationship with the employers, and the employers expect that we're going to follow up. We sell it as a service to them so that we can help if there's any difficulties. Building it in after the fact is far, far more difficult.
It is, and I think EPA wants people to track, but I think they also understand how difficult it is. And even anecdotal, if you have really difficult time with tracking, they really like anecdotal write-ups of what happened to so-and-so, or what's happening to this class. And while you might not get perfect accounting of what happened to every graduate, you could have some stars, and some will just go off and you only ever hear from them again. But you might have some that are promoted or are doing fine, or they've come back for refreshers. This whole idea that both Santa Fe and Florida State, Jacksonville, use with the tablets helps a little bit. If they don't completely hijack your tablet, often they'll let them take the tablet. They put the curriculum on the tablet. They put emails on the tablet. That's one way of keeping in touch with them. And it can be a little bit of a hook to keep their information current. And if you have an email listserv, or you have some kind of communications with them, you can ask them to send just a short line of how they're doing and what they're doing, and something like that, and then keep that in a file and note that as best you can.
I also, Mike, work, I'll just say that only works for my population about 10% of the time. I also have a deal with my department, New Mexico Department of Labor Workforce Solutions, where I submit the social security numbers and they run a check on who's employed within the state. It helps me with my in-state people, but not my people who leave the state.
That's a very interesting idea. So you submit the Social Security to the Department of Employment Security?
Workforce Solutions, yeah. That's what we call ours.
Okay. Okay. Do you think every WIB has something like that?
We have something similar here in Wilmington. This is Ronique from West End Neighborhood House. We have something similar, but it's a paid service. So we try to use that as a last resort. And like currently right now, like I mentioned to you, from that last spring cohort, they pretty much, just like you mentioned, some of them have fallen off the face of the earth. So we had a resort to using that service, but definitely I would talk to my supervisor about that, see if we can try to develop a partnership with the Department of Labor. I got to see if we have something similar like that up this way. But, we're trying to refrain being nonprofit and spending more money. But
my workforce solution does it for free, and I count it as part of my leveraging.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So
some
you might have a
will,
double whammy there.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of them will do it for free or very little, and some of them have a flat fee and you have to pay it. So, it really depends on where you are located. And it also depends sometimes not so much on the state-level Department of Labor, but the local WIB, because those are the people that you're working with your MOUs.
Right. The local WIBs. And we used to be pretty involved with the National Association of Workforce Investment Boards, and they basically admit we've got stars and we've got rocks out there. And we've got some WIBs that are just awesome. And then some, forget it. You just have to do the best you can with them. And unfortunately, it's not uniform around the country. And that goes for both services and, as you said, tracking students. Do you go to the WIB rather than, say, the one-stop? If there is a one-stop, you go right to the Workforce Investment Board as high up as you can go when you do this? I would assume if you indicate to them that you're on an EPA, you're a nonprofit with an EPA program, that might get you some leverage in terms of getting some free service. Good idea.
Yeah,
well,
at least that for my particular program, they can't give me what they're earning, but they can tell me that they are employed, and then I can, track them down from there.
Right. Now, when you report, do you now put this in your quarterly reports in terms of the tracking requirement?
Yes.
And that's how you basically report it in terms of the best you can.
Well, and then I also, I try to track people down. Like, for example, it won't work on the Native American reservation. So, I usually know who their family is, and I'll go to their mother or grandmother's house and then track them down from there.
Yeah, it's a way of trying to track, and EPA's got this, and they just want to see where their graduates are going, and they want to, and they have to justify this program, and this is very helpful to them. The anecdotes are extremely helpful to the extent that in your progress reports, you could put some anecdotal information. They love pictures. They love if you get someone on the job and a picture and send it to your regional coordinator. Numbers are great and they need them, but anecdotal stories are just awesome. As anyone who went to our last couple grantee meetings would attest, they really have an impact on the administrators. Well, let's talk today. And Heather, I think she wrote me a note and said she wasn't going to be able to make it today, so she does our news from Washington and HMTRI. And of course, as usual, their silence is golding, or it's deafening right now, because we're anticipating when this announcement will be made. We're starting a new fiscal year next week, and it'll be after that. My instincts are that they're not going to announce it right away. They'll probably wait till the end of the, towards the end of the month. We never know. And actually, even the project officer, it has to go through a lot of clearances at EPA. So I would say it might be more towards the end of October, early November, when that'll happen. And then, of course, the gears get into motion in terms of setting up a work plan. You'll get a notice, and you'll get the regional coordinators are very sharp, and they're right up on this. They'll contact you and be setting up appointments to finalize your work plans. And the person that sent in the grant will have to accept it, the fact that they're going to take the – you're going to accept the grant and the grant money, and to go through that at about a month. And then after that, you'll be able to start and setting up your accounting accounts, and you'll be able to go from there. On the HMTRI front, and there's lots of apologies, but we're still, this is the first time we're working through this all grantee meeting in coordination with the huge brownfields meeting. The plans are pretty much set in that we're going to be meeting on the 10th of December for our all grantee meeting. It'll be a full day. And we're suggesting people come in on the 9th. There's actually an environmental justice meeting, I think, on the evening of the 9th. So if you can get into Los Angeles Convention Center on the 9th, HMTRI is going to pick up the hotel for the 9th and for the 10th. And so the 9th, you come in on the 9th, and then the 10th, we're going to have this full-day meeting. We're going to have a lunch, through lunch, we're going to have through dinner. So it's going to be a full day, and then at that point we'll be done, and then you could attend the National Brownfields meeting from the 11th through the 13th. That would be Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Usually these brownfields meetings end up about midday on Friday, and then everybody's got to scramble to get back home. The hotel, and of course you'd have to pay your transportation no matter what, either way. HMTRI is going to be picking up the hotel on the 9th and the 10th, and then the 11th through the 13th, you'll be charged for the hotel.
You know how much that's going to be, Mike? Do you know what rate
that
is?
Yeah, we're actually going to kind of the furthest hotel, which is, I think it's fairly reasonable. And this is where the rub is and why there's been a delay, that we've got a block, and what EPA wants us to do and what the meeting people want us to do is we're going to, when you call, you can, if you want to make your reservations for the National Brownfields meeting, that's fine, but hold up on it for just a little bit on the hotel, because the way it's going to be is when you sign up for the hotel, you'll be able to put a code in, it'll be HMTRI, and that will tell the hotel and the meeting people that they're going to bill us for the 9th and 10th, and then they'll bill you for the 11th, 12th, the night of the 11th and the 12th, leaving on the 13th. And I think it's more expensive than Alexandria. I think it's around $250 or $200 a night, something like that. Well, all this is going to be out in a letter. Heather was going to try to get this out this last week, so I expect this week. She was waiting on final okays. The last thing we wanted to do is say, well, this is how you do it, and then find out that someone changed their mind or, you know, there's some glitch. So she wants to sign up herself and make sure everything goes through smoothly, and then we're going to send out a detailed letter on exactly step-by-step what to do, and that'll go to all the PLC members, and it'll go to all former grantees. We'll get it. So you'll probably get, for those of you who are grantees, you'll get a couple of letters, or you'll get it twice. And then for those of you who have not gotten your grant yet, or your prospective grantee, or you're a PLC member, you'll also get an invite, and that'll have all the instructions on it. And we're waiting any minute just the final okays for that. So if you hold up for, I'm sure at the next PLCs, which will be on October 9th, we'll have all of this pretty well set. So now if you've already made reservations for your hotel, we'll handle this on an individual basis. I think a couple of people have already set up some hotel arrangements, and we'll coordinate that one by one on a manual basis. So the hotel block they're giving us is, it's further from the, it's a official hotel, but it's one of the further, it's right, not the close-up one, it's a little further. So it's the most reasonable one of the group. So
what's the name of the hotel?
I'm trying to think of the name.
Is it the Sheraton?
It's the Sheraton, yes.
And the convention is being held where?
Los Angeles Convention Center.
Will the all grantee meeting be at the convention center or at the hotel?
No, it'll be at the convention center, so it'll be all right there. And so it should be, if this works as planned, it's going to be really cool because we'll be right there at the convention center. We're going to have all of the display people, all of the potential employers are going to have displays, all the biggies, all the nationals will have displays. So it's going to give grantees a chance and prospective grantees to talk to and give their cards and contact information to the exhibitors. We're going to have our own exhibit, which is not going to be geared towards HMTRI. It's going to be geared toward our grantees. So what we're going to be doing as we get closer is bring some materials and could even man it to the extent you want. And we'll be talking about the programs, and we'll be promoting each of the programs, and we'll be promoting the graduates. So it's, from our point of view, this whole thing is all about placement, really. It's about getting recognized on a national level, but not HMTRI, but all the grantees. And so when we talk to these national employers, we'll say, well, are you doing work in any of these particular areas? Because we here are the grantees, and try to get some lists together that we can share. So that'll be one of the big advantages. Another one is all of the administrators will be there, the head of the EPA, assistant administrators, all the regional coordinators will be there in addition to the employers. And the NIHS people will be there too. They have a sister program that some of you are involved in, and they were even asking about a joint meeting, but I'm not sure if we'll have time for that, but we'll have them over there. So it should be good. It's a little bit of a delay. It's the first time we do this. In the future, we might do this similarly. We'll probably keeping the Alexandria meeting, but on years, every 2 years when they have the national meeting, we'll probably have something, depending on how this works out. The big advantage is the employers being there, because it'll have a chance for grantees to talk one-on-one with the employers.
A question about the conference. So HMTRI will cover the hotel for the 9th and 10th for the all grantee meeting, but the EPA grant does not cover any of the conference at all, or will it cover some of it?
The grant, your grant will cover all of it. Your environmental workforce development and job training grant will cover, as part of your grant, your travel budget.
You put it in the travel budget, it'll cover it.
Right.
If you didn't put it in the travel budget, you'll need to talk to your FBO.
That's right. And everyone was encouraged in the RFP to put that in. One of the other reasons we decided to combine them is we would have had two meetings. We would have had an Alexandria meeting in August where the new grantees wouldn't have been able to attend because they hadn't been granted yet. And then they would, if they wanted to go to the national meeting, that would be another expense. So in this case, it's just one-shot deal. So it's actually would be a little bit of a savings. In the past, some of the grantees had the budget for travel to the all grantee meeting, and then if they wanted to go to the Brownfields meeting, they'd have to do that. So this will help a little bit. But you're exactly right. Hopefully, it'll be in your travel budget somewhere. So, and for some of you, it might be a little less expensive to go to LA than to Alexandria. I'm not sure. So, but as we get closer, things will start picking up on this, and we'll be working with everyone to decide what we want to discuss at these breakouts and who we want to have there and that type of thing. Well, we're moving into a little bit of a new area that's kind of sometimes a little difficult to talk about, but one that we've talked in the past about is leveraging and leveraging strategies. And what's the difficult part is this new, when the RFP came out and this cycle, they're going to be awarding 20 grants at $4 million, $200,000, 20 grants, $4 million. And that's okay. It's more than we've gotten in the past, but we have people who are eligible. We've got 11 grantees who are in their third year who really need to get re-upped. And then we've got 14 grantees in their second year and 17 in their first year. We're not sure how EPA is going to send this money out. And then we've got some new grantees. So we've got these four groups. And of the four groups, they're going to split it up. I don't know that they'll split it up equally. They always like to have new grantees represented. They like to re-up the former grantees who are performing well. We've always, this comes up all the time, we've always asked for more money. That's not something that they listen to us too much about, but they try their best to do something. So there probably will be some grantees who will not have funds in the future for the next, until the next go around. And so the question that we want to address in the next couple of sessions is some of these strategies that we might be able to use to, we've used in the past, we've talked about leveraging unsupported activities like the non-EPA training, the social services, the life skills, those types of training where you go to the WIB, you go to philanthropic organizations, or you might be backstopped by a utility or another organization whose mandate it is to provide services that you need. So we've done that, and we've talked about that quite a bit in the past. We're going to the next step of perhaps what happens if we have to lean on these people to support our technical program. And that's not too far a reach. There are several strategies that we'll talk about, you know, today and the next couple sessions, and we'll talk to some grantees about it and what they've done. But when you look at these strategies, we've got some that are much part of a much larger organization. And we'll talk about each of these individually, and we'll have them in the notes. But there are some that are, as we suggested in the organization, there are some that they are teaching environmental workforce, but their organization is doing all sorts of things. And there's lots of examples of that. Cypress Mandela is a very popular one where they're primarily a construction trades nonprofit, but they added the environmental workforce development. If workforce development got suspended for a year or two, I expect they would be able to continue doing workforce development training. They found that that's kind of integrated into that program. LA Conservation Corps, and some of these strategies overlap into other things. I've broken them down into about four or five different strategies, but some use both or all of them. LA Conservation Corps is another one. OAI works with the NIHS program, their worker training program, where they have a career training program. So they're working multiple grants, both the Environmental Workforce Development and also some grants with NIHS. And they have some other grants that are local in Chicago, where they might be training, actually even training outside. At one time they were training hospital workers. They might be working with the Vietnamese boat people in terms of health and safety in salons. So they're into a lot of things, of which the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program is one. And if it goes away for whatever reason, or temporarily get suspended, I expect they would continue or perhaps downsize, but continue. We've got UBRO, who is a multifaceted social organization that has been instrumental in adding environmental workforce development as in one of those things. St. Nick's was Hunter's Point. There are many of them. We had one organization, New Jersey Youth Corps. They turned out they really didn't need EPA money anymore. They just grew and grew, and the Youth Corps was part of it and maintained, were able to get some state money and do just fine. So many of the organizations, if you're part of a bigger organization, sometimes this suspension of money for a time being can be absorbed and you can keep your program together. And in all of these strategies that we're going to be talking about, the idea is to try to keep a core together, try to keep your organization functional. And if it's not operating in full capacity, close to it or at a reduced rate, instead of doing three cohorts, you might be doing one cohort, or you're keeping your team together. Another strategy, and we'll put all these in the notes, another strategy is social entrepreneurship. Recycle Force is a good one, and we'll get them onto the PLC. They've been on it before. Recycle Force is essentially a recycler in Indiana, and they switch back and forth. They've got their recycling operation, and they've got environmental workforce development job training program, and the two complement each other. They can go in back and forth between the entrepreneurial effort and the job training effort, and they could switch back and forth. They were doing this before the grant came along, and they'll probably be doing it if at some point, I think they're in their first year or second year. If there's a lapse, so I'm sure they'll be doing it after. So that's an example. Limitless Vista has been around for a long time. And, of course, that was started by Patrick Barnes. He's got BFA consultants. He's got a consulting organization. And he needed people as feeder to his consulting operation. And they established the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program. And again, it's an entrepreneurial, synergistic situation. Coalfields, that some of you have been on the call for a while, will remember Coalfields. They have six focus areas that are entrepreneurial, and they're looking. They've got nonprofits in arts and construction and mine and reclamation and green infrastructure, recycling. And again, it gives them an opportunity to do the environmental job training. So that certainly is one strategy that people have used and continue to use if there is a slight reduction in funding or a lapse in funding for whatever reason. It isn't necessarily the end of the world. The others of our organization, and it's interesting because we've got all kinds of organizations. We've got a lot of city-county organizations like King County or City of Tacoma, City of Durham. City and county organizations are a little trickier because sometimes they've got the funds and they use them, and if those funds go away, they have to have appropriated budget for it or they just can't support it. Durham has had some challenges where that was kind of the case in that. Sometimes you're successful and sometimes you're not. King County had a grant for several years and then went away for a while and then came back and were able to reassemble their team. So it's not necessarily the end of the world. They kept their team and their program together only to come back. Colleges are another example, and whether it's Lawson State, St. Louis Community College, Florida State at Jacksonville. Janet's on the call. Jenny, you had this situation in your own right, didn't you, at Santa Fe Community Colleges?
Oh, yeah.
Where you ran for a while, and then you had to kind of go into hibernation state for a little bit.
Well, no, I didn't go into hibernation as much as I used the grant as seed money to try and develop our program, a training program locally, because we need, like right now I've got 627 job applications sitting on my desk, employers that need people training. And we just don't have any training programs in New Mexico that train waste workers.
Mm-hmm.
So then I applied for the money to try and help out the local economy.
Right. And I guess the strategy here is, at some point, is there a space where philanthropic or where company support, you know, these are $200,000 grants. If one were to imagine either a foundation or a company saying, I need your people bad enough, I'm willing to throw in $50,000, or I'll throw in $20,000 or $30,000, or maybe more, or maybe we'll fund you at $300,000 or $400,000 because we need the workers. It's a bold step because you have to put on your hat of program developer, and you, rather than being in the organization where we're all used to being, you've got to go out and kind of be an entrepreneurial marketer of this program. And if you find a real strong program, in your case, you might have an organization like Los Alamos who, if the money were to go away, it isn't a reach to say to Los Alamos, do you have some discretionary money that you can keep us going? We need $100,000.
It don't work that way anymore. Those are the old DOE days.
that's the wishful thinking, isn't it? Well, yeah. I used to work at Argonne, and we couldn't take grants that were under like $100,000 because they were too hard to administer. And everything had to be, you know, in the millions up. But you never can tell. You never can tell. It's rounding error for organizations like that. But it is a possibility. It might be a public utility, or it might be a matter of putting some pieces together. The other and the last one that I wanted to just mention is you're out on your own. And you've got to seek out other grants, which we talked a little bit about that. We had an organization called JFY, Jobs for Youth. And they were, when they came into this program, and they had been in the program for quite a while, and they left the program not because they didn't like it or anything, but because they moved into another educational program. They were looking at their interest changed, and they worked into a different area. But when I first worked with them, I asked them what grants they had, and they said, "Well, no grants. They were 100% philanthropic," and of course they were located in Boston, which made it help. They had symphony nights, they had lots of donors, and they were able to get what was often unrestricted funds that they could spend however they wanted. And of course, that's a dream for anyone in this business if someone just hands you some money and say, do good. I like your concept, and let's go with that. You know, and you don't, you may not have to do tracking. You don't have to do quarterly reports. You might have to do some sort of reporting, but that thing about foundations and family offices, there is a lot of money floating out there. Energy Coordinating Agency is a good example of that. Energy Coordinating Agency, is someone here from Energy Coordinating, ECA? ECA approached the Knight Foundation. They started with Knight Foundation, and then they brought on board the Ford and Kaiser Family Foundation. They were able to restore, they started in 1984, again, fairly philanthropic in Philadelphia. They were able to find an old Civil War era building and totally revamp it and turn it into a training center, and did an excellent job. And of course, they are an EPA grantee. They primarily were organized to work on energy savings for underserved populations. Pretty much like what we're doing in the environmental, but they were able to add on an environmental component to qualify for the EPA. But again, it was one of these organizations that started before environmental workforce came along, were enhanced by environmental workforce from EPA, and whatever the future brings to them, they're going to continue. And I'm sure hopefully they'll receive re-up funding. If they didn't, I'm sure they'll continue and go for the next cycle. So it's just something to keep in mind at this point in where we're at. Hopefully we'll be getting a lot of positive. I can't help but assume that EPA is going to make these awards strategically so that those grantees, and we don't know how many people applied. Often we have grantees who have run the course. They've done this. It's been hard work, and they don't see it working for them in the future, and they may be in for a while, and they may decide they're not going to do this anymore. So there may be some people that will drop out, and there may be, I'm sure they'll try to re-up as many people as they can and move forward with that. So I would say stay positive, and of course, we'll, as soon as we hear anything, we'll let everyone know. It's still within the month, but I want to just get people in this mode of don't start packing up your stuff if it isn't re-upped right away. There might be some plan Bs. Whether if you're in a community college associated grant, you might be able to get some funds out of the college, or you might be able to work into the credit program. You've got the credit and the non-credit programs. These are usually in non-credit, and you may be able to morph for a little while into a credit program where you're supported by the college. If you're in an area where there's some very large employers, you may be able to hit them up. $200,000, you don't necessarily need the full $200,000 to keep a program going. You might do one or two cohorts, so you might be able to work on less than that. You may be surprised and get a lot more than that. I recently heard about Bank of America pledging to do workforce development to the tune of a couple $100 million, and I don't know where that program is going, but there are organizations giving out money for this. The hard part is seeking it out, and I think that's something we're all going to be looking at to see, is there some alternative source of funding in addition to what EPA is trying to do here, and work on that level. So any of you have ideas, or in your organizations, what you think you might be doing one way or another, or how you do you have some benefactors that you feel real positive about in terms of leverage funding? So it's hard to the problem with the big organizations like the Ford Foundation and Kaiser is they get deluged by grants, and they tend to go into these big programs, and for workforce development and environmental job training, it tends to be more on a local basis, local employers or local banks, local utilities, which are another place. Wherever you've got a lot of money being spent, local utilities is also some, if you're fortunate or unfortunate enough to be in a locality where there's a monopoly, in exchange for monopoly, they're required to support underserved populations and the community. Those are the people you want to start looking at and what they might have in terms of leveraging. And I'm not just talking about leveraging if you're not refunded. I'm also talking about leveraging if you continue to do these unsupported programs. And those are the other people that you want to nurture, is those organizations that have been willing and more than willing to support your non-EPA supported activities. They're excellent organizations where you may want to search out leverage funds and to go from them. Does anyone have any questions about this or anything else we've been talking about recently? It's a little bit of a touchy subject in that we all like to think we're just going to keep things funded.
I have a question more so about the funding opportunity with NIH.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And applying for those two different cores,
right.
The nuclear waste removal, and the other one is I forget the acronyms.
Well, there's several programs, and we'll put those in the notes. There's the broad worker training program consists of the one that's almost a sister program. Ours is a career worker training program, And that's, they used to call it the Minority Worker Training Program. It's focused more on health and safety, but includes remediation. Pretty much, we're focused on remediation, and we do health and safety. They do health and safety, and they focus on health and safety, but they do remediation. So we have this overlap with them, and they'll be at the all grantee meeting in December. That's one program that is very similar to this program, and that's a good thing to look at.
We're looking at. They're trying to develop a needs assessment to present to our CEO of the community center, so we can apply for that funding opportunity. And like you said, it is similar because, you know, their focus is health and safety and remediation. So that is actually the core. Will we have to apply for any of the additional ones, or can we just
You can just do that one, and you don't have to do all of them. I don't want to say off the record, but just from 20 years of experience and watching all the programs, and the NIH programs were designed to protect workers. The labor unions were extremely strong when this started. In fact, their program got $20 million a year to protect workers. And at the time, and it was a good decision because most of the workers, the government workers, a lot of them were union organizations, and they had to find out how to mandate health and safety quick, and unions were into health and safety. That was one of the prime things that they offered their members, were health and safety, and they fought for that in their contracts. So when the health is, it was called the Worker Training Program, and that's another one that still exists. It's one of those three or four programs that they offer. The Worker Training Program wasn't career worker training, it was worker training, and it was health and focused on health and safety, period. And that went mostly to labor organizations, AGC. It went to electrical union, steel workers. HMTRI has one of those grants through, it's a sister organization called PEAT, Partnership for Environmental Technology. And when we first applied for this, and this, we're going back to the turn of the century, basically, we were originally rejected our grant because most of it went to labor unions. And I can't say that was a bad decision, because that was the biggest, they were trying to get the biggest punch for their buck. And so we were rejected, but the argument was made that labor unions doesn't cover everything. And so NIHS reconsidered, and they looked at that, and they actually gave a grant to OAI, who has a grant, and PEAT has a grant, Partnership for Environmental Technology. HMTRI has a subset that works with PEAT to deliver our greatest institute. These are larger institutional grants, and they tend to go to the same people every year. Breaking into, say, the nuclear one, this is just my opinion, is very difficult because they go to very large organizations that have incredible amount of capability. What we suggest is, if you want to get into working with these, if you could become a sub, well, you could. I would definitely apply for the Worker Career Training Program if you wish. But you may want to consider looking at as a subcontractor or a subgrantee, working for one of these organizations. And it might be a laborers organization. It might be a
Yes. For example, N3B is a company that is in the nuclear worker training. And, for example, I'm working with them on the apprenticeship program that they are developing for the Legacy Waste Project at Los Alamos.
Right.
And so we're looking at in fact, that was the piece of paper that I lost this morning when my cat walked across the computer, is the crosswalk of what we do in our EPA training versus what they do. And what we're hoping to develop is, you know, I do the, you know, you know, selection and finding of people that are qualified and the basic training, and then they can just do the site-specific nuclear worker training.
Excellent idea. Excellent idea. In fact, I think that's where the potential is working with a community. OAI, for example, I'm sure we'll be, again, I'm just speaking off the top of my head, but if they reapply for their NIHS grant, they will be perhaps looking for partners to do something in their locality. They may restrict their target area to certain parts of the country or whatever. The same with Pete. They have a little different model, but they might be looking for someone in an area. There may be a labor organization, you said, might be now to get the NIHS grant, which are, they're fairly large. It has to be a nonprofit, so it would be a labor organization. But again, it could be the same thing goes to corporate organizations where they're not interested necessarily in getting into the nuts and bolts or into the weeds on these things. And they're I think, open to farming this out to a nonprofit, particularly one that's got credentials like you all have. In other words, you can do the recruitment, the screening, the training. You might even provide life skills. You know, if you go after some of these grants, you're not restricted as EPA is. You can do all sorts of things that EPA is restricted from doing. So you might perform the life skills, the caseworker. So that's exactly right. And their grants are being due in the next couple months. So this isn't the worst time to start feeling that out. Of if you hear about someone applying for an NIHS grant.
Well, one of the things that I've been being contacted by are the larger environmental firms like Veolia and Waste Management, mm-hmm. and they have hundreds of job openings, but the problem is I've been trying to refer them to grantees in their general areas, right. But a lot of the grantee programs aren't providing the environmental training that they need, because they need more than just HAZWOPR. They need the DOT and some of the and the RCRA training. So that's just, you know, if you want to tap into those local companies, those would be a good one to partner with.
Well, that's an advantage, and you can do this within the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program and do these special programs. And it kind of sets you free when you don't have those restrictions. And if you have a private sector company that says, okay, I like your graduates, but I need this specific training, and they're willing to pony up for it, say, we'll give you $10,000 or we'll give you $15,000. You've got the infrastructure already in place, and you've got the credibility, you've got the reputation, you've got the reputation in the neighborhood. These are all assets. They're intangibles that you all have as a result of what you've been doing. And you could offer that to them. What they need to offer you is some money. And if you could convince them of that, if they're a big enough company, they spend money on marketing. A lot of them have their own foundations. So it's not a far reach to go out and say, we're ready. And we're ready to train, and we know how to train, and we know how to track. We know how to work with the people that you may need, and we know how to give them special certifications, but we do need some funding for this. And there's nothing that says you could be part of the EPA program and do all sorts of other things. You could train nuclear. You could train DOT. You could go out and train other types of wastewater or air pollution. You might
we have a number of those programs, yeah,
and that's the way to go, and you're becoming purely entrepreneurial, but there are some advantages to you if you go that route in addition to keep up with the federal programs,
right?
You're just adding to it. But I like your idea of pursuing the NIHS money. I think it's going to be difficult if you pursue one of those big programs, because you're up against organized labor on those, unless you go in as a subcontractor. a subgrantee or as an assistant to some of those. I think your best shot, if you were going to apply, is go for that worker, career worker training program. But one word of caution, you could use your EPA experience, but it has to be a different target group. In other words, you can't combine. You could combine programs, but they can't overlap.
Right.
And that goes for NIHS as well as EPA. So you would do have to rephrase it that you've had this experience in this part of town or in this community group, but you want to address this specific, maybe they're veterans or a specific ethnic group or a particular underserved group, and go after that when you write your grant. But go for it.
Well, I'm going to be working with Pete here real soon, so.
Good. That would be a good one. And all of those organizations reach out as much as you can.
Good.
Well, we'll try to keep talking about this as we go. And I'll try to put some information in the notes that might give you some ideas of some things you can do to enhance your program. In addition to EPA, I would stay positive as far as EPA. They're trying to do the best they can for their grantees. So let's keep thinking in those terms, too.
Thank you very much, Mike.
We'll talk to you all on the 9th. Well, that's right. our next meeting. And we'll be getting closer to these announcements, so that should be interesting. And as soon as we get the news of anything, we'll let you know. Yes.
Hi, this is Linda.
I was on the
call earlier, but I had to put the phone down. I just wanted to make a comment regarding the Brownfields Conference and the travel funds. And I know that HMTRI is providing the travel or the hotel for the 9th and the 10th. But if any grantee does not have the national conference in their travel budget already, they can speak to their project manager or their PO about moving funds around. It's only a small amount of funds, so even if it's not in the travel budget, if there is another line item that you can move the funds from to the travel budget, you can do that, but definitely speak with your project manager or your project officer.
Great idea, and I'll put those in the notes. So in other words, if for some reason they find that, or their administrator says, well, you don't have anything in travel, then the answer is let's talk to the regional EPA coordinator and see what we can do about moving some funds.
Yes.
And that would cover the travel, the hotel, and the expense of the meeting.
Yes.
Not our meeting, the Brownfields meeting.
Right.
Great.
Yes.
Thank you for that comment. We'll make sure that we get that out.
Okay. You
all have a great week, and we'll talk to you all soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.